96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drama on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Summer is just around the corner, and with rising temperatures, could we also see an increase in crime in D.C.? What's the city's plan to address it? We're talking about that with the D.C.'s police chief, Peter Newsham, also in studio. We have Keith Washington, Keith Alexander, reporter with the Washington Post. I tell you, hey, Keith, how you doing?
Keith Washington is good.
You'll take that. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Keith and Chief, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Can we go with Keith Washington Post Alexander?
Yeah, there we go.
You go. I like that. Yes.
That'll Keith Washington the singer.
Singer and the writer, yes.
Let's talk about some of the more high-profile things that we've seen over the past couple of weeks, Chief. I want to start with this apparent surge in violence, gun violence related to youth. What's going on in the district from your perspective?
So, it's very sad when we see young people, their lives, snuffed out when they're their early teens. So we've had two cases, as you know, Jalen and Tyshawn, young people. Jalen was a Ballou student who had his life taken completely unnecessarily. We have made a lot of progress in that case. As you know, in Tyshawn's case, we made two arrests just the other day. The really sad news is that the two kids that we arrested were just that. They were kids. It was a 16 and an 18-year-old. There probably will be some other arrests in that case, Tyshawn's case, also younger people. So now you have all these young people lives that are destroyed, which seems over what's a minor dispute that had to escalate into a situation where you have a young person who's lost their life. It's interesting in this case in particular, Tyshawn's dad, who I've had the opportunity to talk to a couple of times, his number one concern, and I don't even, you can even begin to imagine what it's like, to send your kid to school and get a phone call saying that your son is in the hospital and, to later learn that he's lost his life. And his number one concern, were with the other kids at the school. He's like, this incident has really scared those kids over there. He's like, Chief, if you can do anything for me, can you please find the people that are responsible so those kids don't have to be scared going to school? And you talk about a noble thing to do and a noble thing to say. But the tragic loss of young lives in our city, it's, you know, we're not like unlike any other major city in America. These things happen. We have to find a way to stop this from happening.
But what's fueling this? I mean, you touched on a point. I noticed that when I cover the courts, when Keith Alexander covers the courts at the Washington Post, I hear one thing that I hear from families of the victim is just how amazed they are at these children who have guns and knives. That's the one thing that really blows their minds. So what's going on in terms of, is it conflict resolution? I mean, something other than retaliation is fueling children killing children in our city.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. And one of the things that we've been kind of focused on and emphasizing here in Washington, D.C. is, you know, these illegal firearms that we have in our community, we got to get them out of there. And all adults play a responsibility in that.
But it's not just firearms. We just had a stabbing recently, and where a young Tyshawn was
but,
stabbed.
You know, the large majority of our homicides in the district are the result of shootings. So, if you want to look at the larger issue in our city, it is the firearms.
So, is the firearms not conflict resolution?
The conflict resolution absolutely is a part of it as well. You know, you want young people when they're angry to find a different way to resolve those disputes, and some of our figures, our larger figures in society, some of our folks in Hollywood are not helping us much, because a lot of times you will see in these, you know, in these movies and some of the things, these video games that our kids are watching, the way that disputes are resolved is through violence. I don't know if that's playing a role in this, but we do have to find a way to get through to our children that you know, you talk about Tyshawn's case. Of course, you have a family who's lost their son, but now you have these three or four other kids who their lives are destroyed too, because they're going to have to go into the criminal justice system and probably go into the criminal justice system for a very long time.
And we're also seeing a growth in Ward 8. I mean, we're seeing a lot of homicides. The majority of the homicides in the district are in Ward 8.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you look at Ward 8, we break it up by district. So in our 7th district, we have 27 of the homicides of the 59 homicides this year. So almost half of the homicides are in one district. The next closest district is the 6th district that has 12. So there is a significant issue over in Ward 8.
And what about Ward 8?
Ward 8 is our 7th district.
That's the 7th district. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking to D.C. Police Chief Peter Newsham about crime and public safety in the district. Also in studio with us, Keith Alexander, Washington Post reporter. If you have a question or comment, give us a call again at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Chief, I had a question for you. Over the past several years, even you could argue the past decade, we've heard you and, of course, your predecessor make reference to crews in D.C. Are we seeing a growth in them? And what is the difference between crews and gangs? Are they interchangeable? Why is that? Why is the term crews being used as opposed to gangs?
Yeah, you know, gangs are a little bit more formal. To get into a gang, there's usually requirements. There's usually some kind of an indicator that you're in the gang. There could be tattoos. There could be markings. They could be carrying particular symbols on their clothing that indicates they're part of a game. So it's a little bit more formal. When they talk about crews, you're talking about a little bit more about a loose-knit organization. So it's usually a group of young men who associate with each other, but they don't necessarily identify themselves as being in a crew. But they will stick up for each other in the event that something happens. The good news on the crew issue here in the district, and you know, if you look at the homicides that we've had, most of the violence in the city, this is very much very unlike what we had in 2015. In 2015, we had a lot of crew stuff going on back and forth, a lot of retaliation. The homicides that we're seeing this year are they seem like individual incidents between known combatants. They're either known, they know them very well, or they know them very loosely.
You're talking about people who just don't like each other, for example.
Well, what's happening is something transpires between a couple of folks and somebody introduces usually a firearm, sometimes a cutting weapon. Next thing you know, we've lost a life here in the city. So the retaliation thing going on in the district is a good thing. In my opinion, but still we got to find a way to knock down some of these homicides that we're having.
Do you have any updates on the officer involved shooting in Brentwood? I think the last public conversation that you had is that the internal affairs had not had an opportunity to talk to him. He had hired a lawyer. What's the update on that?
And the victim was Daquan Young, correct?
Yes.
Daquan Young, yes.
So that was in our Brentwood neighborhood. It was just outside of a rec center. So the officer did come in and gave us an interview and actually did a walkthrough in the case. We have retrieved some video from the area that gives us some images from the scene. One of the things about the video is that there are a number of adults that were in the area just before the shooting occurred. So one of the things we're going to have to do as part of the investigation is try and identify who those people is and people are and get their version of exactly what occurred. What we've been able to determine to this point with the information that we do have is that the decedent in the case was on the other side of the street from the off-duty officer. The off-duty officer had gone to that neighborhood, and it was a neighborhood I don't believe that he had been to before, so it was a neighborhood he was unfamiliar with. He was going there to go to a cookout with some friends. He had actually walked past the house that he was supposed to be going to, so he got onto his cell phone. The decedent approached the officer. It looked like there was an uncomfortable conversation going on between the two. And then shortly thereafter, within a matter of seconds, there was an exchange of gunfire between the two. We don't believe that the officer, in the case identified himself as a police officer. We don't know if he had an opportunity to do that. We do know that both the officer, and the decedent in this case both fired their weapons. And we do know definitively that the weapon that we recovered on the scene was in possession of the decedent in the case.
What could possibly lead to this uncomfortable conversation? What was the conversation about that could lead to the death of
Did they know each other? Have you all decided?
There's no indication that they knew each other. We don't have any information to suggest that they knew each other. And we only have one version right now. The version from the officer is that the decedent was confronting him about why he was in the neighborhood. And the officer also suggests that he saw the weapon. And when he confronted the guy about the weapons came out and there was a shooting.
Has there been an autopsy done on the decedent to show any drugs or alcohol involved?
Any toxicology reports will be some time before they get that. So that will be part of the investigation. And that's one of the things, you know, and I really urge people to be very patient, and it's the hardest thing in the world to be patient in these situations. But you got to let all of that information come into this investigation before we draw any conclusions about exactly what happened. It's going to be really important to identify the people that we see in that video so we can get them in, get their version. It's going to be really important to look at the forensic evidence that's out there to analyze that. And it's going to be really important to look, you know, to find any video and then get the exact story as to exactly what happened.
What's the status of the officer currently?
The currently is back to duty.
He's back on duty.
Yes.
When did he come in? When did Internal Affairs or even yourself have this explanation or conversation with him?
He came in, I want to say, 2 days after the incident.
I see.
Yep. So it was shortly after the incident. And I have actually had this conversation publicly with Peter Herman at the Washington Post, and he did a story on it. And I'm just sharing it with you.
All right. I appreciate that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let me take a quick call before the break. Frank, quickly, what's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I want to say to the chief, stay with it. I want to say to the community, we have to work with the police department. According to the latest research, we only spend $75 per person on the community and $245 to incarcerate people. We have got to put more resources on the ground, on the street, in our community. And when there was 500 murders in this city, we, the community leaders, got involved and help the police department to reduce them. Why don't we put resources out there with the people who are already on the street? I think the worst thing that a Ku Klux Klan is a black man that would take another black man's life. Hurt people, hurt people.
Well, Frank, thank you so much for your comment. I need to... we'll have to adjust your headphones. He was just commenting about involvement in the community, wanting more people to cooperate with the police, and certainly that is something that you have been echoing, and as well as your leadership. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more conversation with D.C.'s Police Chief Peter Newsham, also in studio with us, Keith Alexander, Washington Post reporter, and you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about crime and public safety. Columbia with Police Chief Peter Newsham. Also in studio, Washington Post reporter Keith Alexander. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Harry calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Harry. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
Just fine. Thanks.
I just wanted to take this opportunity to say that I work for the public, so I work with our young people all the time. And what I get out of it is they just don't value life. And most of them, they don't have a father in the home. So they just out here surviving as if, you know, there is no tomorrow. So I think it's kind of hard on both ends. Because it's like, who do you trust? The police don't know what's going on when they pull somebody over. We don't know what's going on when the police pull us over. So it's just rough. It's rough right now.
Harry, thank you so much. Chief, you want to comment on Harry's
Harry, thoughts? First of all, thanks for the work that you are doing with our young people. That's extremely important. And whenever I go out and I talk to folks in the community, I really try to urge people, anything that you can do with our young people to move them in a positive direction is helpful to us as a police department in reducing crime in our city. We got to make our young people realize that there is nothing more important in this world than this short time that we have on this earth. This life is really important. I do think Harry touched on a good point. I think some of our young kids don't appreciate how important this time on this earth is and how short it is. I think when you get old like me, you have a better appreciation for it. But if we can instill in our young people that, you know, there's nothing better than raising a family, going to school, doing all the things that people do during the course of their lifetimes, and trying to get our kids through that tough spot, get them in a position where they get past that period where they don't seem to care, get them in a position where they do care, get them in a position where they realize the importance of living life, and I think we're going to be a better city for it. And the police can't do it all. Harry touched on that as well. There's going to be some kids out there that just right off the bat, they're not going to be trusting of the police. And so that's why I always urge, and we have a lot of people in our community that do this. We have religious leaders that are doing it. We have teachers that are doing it. And I know we have other people that are out there that are spending a lot of time at work every single day. But if you can grab a hold of a couple of kids out here in the community, be a positive role model for
them. Can you give some examples of groups that are doing it in the right way that you can think of?
You know, I'm very excited about Del McFadden and this office that he's opening up. It's called the Ones Office that he's getting ready to start. And so what his plan is, and I think this is going to be successful, and I think it's going to really help us on the crime side here in the city, is he's going to take a number of kids that are in a really bad spot in their lives, and he's going to try and turn their lives around. So he's going to give them wraparound services. He's going to try and get them employed. He's going to try and make sure that they go to work. If they need mental health services or substance abuse issues, he's going to make sure that that's provided for them. And he's going to actually walk these young people through that tough time of their lives, hopefully get them to a point where they can fly on their own and live a successful life. And you know, the other group that I'm very impressed with is that, you know, the National Guard has this academy that they run for kids who have dropped out of school. This place is amazing. And I think they have about a 60 or 70% success rate. And they bring these kids in and they run them through. It's almost a military style program where they stay at their facility. The facility's out in Maryland for about 5 months. And then they, for about a year, they're assigned a mentor. And during that 5 months, when they're in the National Guard Academy, they actually are able to achieve their GED. And so you have kids who have dropped out of high school. They get into this program. It's strict, and not all the kids make it, but it has a pretty good success rate. And then they get out with their GED. And if you hear some of the success stories of those kids after they get through that 5 months and their year of mentoring, they get their GED, they go out there and they get jobs, they raise families. It's programs like that that are really incredible, really turning our city around.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Renee calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Renee. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just want to say, hey, Chief, you're doing a good job out there.
Thank you, Renee. Okay. Thank you.
I used to work for Campfire USA. Most of my girls were all over at the Mental Health Center on Taylor Street, the NBI building.
Yep.
And we're doing a great job over there.
You are.
I am, anyway. I'm a client over there, but I live on Connecticut Avenue. All right. Down from the zoo. I saw you the other day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're doing a good job.
Well, Renee, thank you so much for your phone call.
It's Adrian. Very kind of you to call in and say that thank you. There's nothing more that you, or better that you can do for a police officer than to tell him thank you. So thank you for saying that.
Chief, could I ask a quick question about Brian Traynor, where things stand? Obviously, the panel recommended that he be fired in the fatal shooting of Terrence Sterling. What's next? You have to make the final call, I understand, and where things stand.
I do. And so I'm not in a position to comment about it other than to say that, as you said, the panel that heard all of the evidence in the case came up with their findings. Their findings were that the officer should be terminated. The officer had 10 days to appeal that decision to me. We actually received an appeal this afternoon, which was on the 10th business day. And I have 15 business days to respond to that appeal. So I'm going to have to go through at this point, look at all of the evidence in the case, and make a final decision.
Adrian, calling from Virginia, go right ahead. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling because I wanted to, I think that it's a very, I work with kids, in the military youth, but I think it's very important that we as the public understand that, police officers do have a job. And that's great that, you know, they go out and do things that some of us wouldn't be able to do. Just as firemen, a lot of us wouldn't be willing to run into a building that's on fire to help someone. So on that end of it, it's great that police officers are willing to do that. But on the other hand, I do believe that police officers need to get back to community policing, which is how policing started. It's kind of hard for you to care and, you know, understand what your what the community's going to. You're not a member of that community and you don't live in that area and kind of do that. And to a certain extent, it's like it's your own safety and everyone understands, but it's also that community's safety. And, you know, if they have officer friendly or whoever they grew up with and, you know, kind of know it, it helps improve that community police officer relationship. And it's not just some guy that's here walking the beat and, you know, they have no connection or anything to the community because it's more of a, I don't live here, so I'm just here for a paycheck or I'm just doing a job, and it's not a real ingenious connection.
Adrian, I'm going to let the chief respond to your comment, and thank you so much for your phone call. Go right ahead, Chief.
So that's a really good point, Adrian. So one of the things we're doing here in the District of Columbia is we are trying to attract young people from the city to join our police department. Right now, only 16% of our police officers actually were born and raised here in the city. About 80% of our police officers, though, are from the region. So they're either from D.C., Maryland, or Virginia. So we do have most of our police officers are very familiar with the District of Columbia. But we do have what's called to attract some of the young kids from the city to the police department. We call it, we have a cadet program. And this program is for young people who do not have 60 college credits and maybe not have the ability to pay to go to school. They can join the police department as a cadet. We will pay for them to work for us on a part-time basis, and we also pay for them to go to UDC to get the 60 college credits required to become a police officer. Then they can matriculate into becoming police officers. In the last couple of years, we've expanded the program from 30 to 75, and in this next fiscal year, the mayor has given us additional money so we can expand that program to 100. So that's a way to draw in young people from our city into becoming police officers in this area. It's an excellent point, and it's one of the things that we're working on.
Let me ask you about the racial sensitivity training that I believe the department is still sending the rank and file through. This, of course, came up, I believe, after the Starbucks incident in Philadelphia. You had officers at the African American Museum downtown. And now we're seeing, we saw just what happened with Sterling Brown in Milwaukee yesterday. When you have an opportunity to talk to the rank and file about this candidly, what are they feeling when they see these kinds of things, this hodgepodge of situations involving police and citizens?
That's a great question. And so if you talk to any good police officer and you see some of the things that we all see on the national news, and it's essentially police misconduct, police bad behavior, a good police officer is just as disgusted by that as anybody in the general public, because that doesn't represent what police officers do or what we're all about. We, as you know, are going through a hiring stage right now. What I tell young people who are interested in joining our police department here in Washington, D.C., is I tell them, I say, listen, forget everything that you've ever seen on TV about what a police officer is. Forget everything you've ever seen in a movie about what a police officer is, because what you see in TV and what you see in movies is you see the police officer that breaks all the rules. You see the police officer that beats up the bad guy, shoots the bad guy, blows up the bad guy, punishes the bad guy. That's not what we do. Policing is a service profession. If you are interested in helping people, this is the department that you want to come to. And that's the type of thing that I'm trying to instill in each of our officers.
Chief, I want to talk a little bit about an incident that happened earlier this week in Baltimore. A four-year veteran was killed during an arrest. And what I'm curious about is that how does that affect the mentality of police officers moving forward? Because I have talked to police officers, officers who've been involved in killing of suspects, and the first thing they say is, I was in fear for my life. Well, now we just had an officer who was killed. What is the ripple effect of what happened to this officer in Baltimore? How does that affect policing every day with your officers?
So that's a great question. And so that hopefully there is no ripple effect from something like that. And so this is a dangerous job. This can be a very dangerous job. And so what you try to do to prevent your officers from getting injured or getting killed, God forbid, is you do it through training. Part of our job, a very, very small portion of our job, requires us to apprehend violent offenders. Sometimes violent offenders will resist that arrest, and sometimes that resistance can be very violent. They can use firearms against our officers. And so what you need to do is, In the event that that eventuality occurs, you need to make sure that your officers have the proper equipment and the proper training to make sure at the end of the day, when you take that person into custody, that everybody's okay. And that means the police officer's okay, the suspect is okay, and anybody who may be in the general vicinity of that thing. And so what we're trying to do in policing is we're trying to find out as many methods as we can to safely and respectfully bring violent offenders into custody. Because like I said a second ago, our job is not to beat up anybody. Our job is not to punish anybody. Our job is if somebody breaks the law, we bring them into custody and we let the criminal justice system handle it.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, more questions about public safety and crime, law, and justice here in the District of Columbia. We are talking to D.C.'s Police Chief Peter Newsham. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about crime and public safety with D.C.'s Police Chief Peter Newsham. Also in studio, Washington Post reporter Keith Alexander. Chief, I wanted to also get an update on a couple of stories. The first one, the incident last week at Somerset Academy, where it was reported to us that dozens of students were told from Baloo, went into Somerset Academy and attacked some students there, entered through the front, through the back, and after a few minutes left. Are you familiar with that? Can you tell me what that was about?
I don't have a lot of detail on that for you.
Okay. What about the three bodies found in Southeast D.C.? Do you have an update on that?
So where we are with that case right now, as you know, we found in the 100 block of Wayne Place, we found the remains of three adult females. One of them was found in a basement crawl space of a multi-family building. The other two remains were found in a shallow grave in an adjacent property. What we've been able to determine so far is that the remains are at least 1 year old, and they could be much older than that, and in all likelihood, they probably are. like I said, the ages of the victims, and the cases were determined to be homicides. In two of the cases, it was determined to be gunshot wounds. And in one of the cases, it looks like it was blunt force trauma. What we're doing right now is we're going back and we have looked through our missing persons reports. And so we have some missing persons from that area, and we have gathered from DNA from some of those families. We've taken some of the remains and we've submitted the femur bones from the three remains to the FBI along with the DNA from the families. And we've sent that to the FBI. Has been great about assisting us with this case. It's been sent to the FBI lab, and we're waiting for results in that case so we can determine if it's the detective that's assigned to the case actually gave me a briefing today. There's a lot of preliminary work that he's doing. He's seeing who lives in the building, how long that they've lived here. He's talking to people in the neighborhood to get some kind of sense as to what that area has been like over the past several years, to have a baseline when we get that information back from the Bureau as to exactly who these folks are. We'll be in a better spot to progress the investigation.
You said something about ages. Were you able to determine ages at all?
It looks like the ages of the victims are between 30 and 60, 30 years of age and 60. So they were adult females. That's what it's believed. And the way I understand it from the medical examiner is they can determine that by the size of the pelvic area determines the age of the bones.
What about race?
The race, I think in one of the cases it's unclear. I believe in the other two cases they believe they are from African descent.
Mm-hmm. And you said looking at the connection to the building. Is there probably that somebody who lived in the building might be responsible for these bodies? At one point?
It could very well be. You know, to find it in the crawl space of the building, that's where your investigation would naturally begin, is with who was in the building, because somebody had access to the building. What we are learning, you know, if you go, depending on how many years you go back, that building was open for a period of time when you go back a number of years.
So, you mean open?
People would frequently enter people from the neighborhood would go into that building, without having a key access.
I want to ask you, first of all, did you see the Sterling Brown video in Milwaukee, the incident with the basketball player for the Milwaukee Bucks?
I did.
Often on this program, we ask our experts, former officers and civil rights attorneys, but we've never had an opportunity to ask a police officer who is active duty. What bad actors notwithstanding, if Sterling Brown parked his car in a handicapped space here in the District of Columbia, over three spaces, went in, came out, the police are there, he comes up and he says, what's going on? What did he, if anything, do wrong? What should the police officers have done instead of what they did?
Or what did the police do wrong?
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, I don't feel like I should be commenting about the ways that police officers have acted in other jurisdictions, because I don't believe that that's my place. I have responsibility for officers who behave here in the District of Columbia. That's my responsibility. But I will say this is that, and our officers are very good at this. When you have minor violations, particularly you don't know what the circumstance is, the best approach for somebody who's involved in a minor violation of the law, whatever it be, a parking, there's all kinds of minor things that we're required to enforce. But the initial interaction between the police officer and the person who's had a minor violation should be one of, what's going on? Get an explanation as to what the circumstances are. You know, it could have had an emergency. There could be a whole host of reasons why somebody did that minor violation. We talk about people living busy lives. And so that's the thing that we try to teach our officers is that, you know, if you go in there, you know, and you're in a confrontational mode, you don't know where that person's coming from. You don't know what kind of day that they've had. And now you have two people and you have a confrontation and it's unnecessary. The way that you go into any one of those situations, and even if you're dealing with a situation where you have to place somebody into custody, it should be, hey, listen, you know, we have a law that's been violated here, and here's what we're required to do as police officers. And that conversation, I think, is often lost in policing. And it's something that I struggle sometimes with my officers, is that when you're conducting business, the best thing you have is your ability to communicate to people why you're there, what you're doing. This is not personal. We're not trying to hurt you. We're not trying to harass you. We have a responsibility to enforce the rules and regulations in the city. And in this circumstance, you have a minor violation. And if you approach the situation from that, from that way, in that way, 99.9% of the times you're going to have a good result.
Well, here's a follow-up to that. Again, if you have someone who has a minor violation, nothing violent or anything like that. Again, if the person is parked across a handicapped spot and the police come up and the guy or the lady comes out and they're about to get in their car and you say, what's going on? Can you just say you're parked illegally? And the guy says, oh, I'm sorry, I was in a rush. Can I get my car? Can you let them go? And I know that's not a hard, fast rule, but would they get in trouble with your administration if somebody's illegally parked? They were there for 3 minutes and now they're going on about their business.
My recommendation on that circumstance is if somebody is in particularly a parking situation and they take off, there's plenty of cameras here in the District of Columbia. You have eyes. Get the tag. Let them go. It's not worth a confrontation.
And I'm not saying they take off without you saying stop. I'm saying, can the officer say, okay, just don't do this again?
Officers do have discretion, and our officers do that every day, you know, for minor violations. And it's usually under circumstances where somebody has a very good reason for the violation.
Jim, let me ask you this question. You have a law degree, and you spent time in internal affairs investigating officers and bad conduct. With a law degree and your background in IAD, how has that made you different from your predecessors? And also, how has that In the role as chief, how has that played out? How has that helped you in any way?
I went to law school much older than I went to night school at the University of Maryland while I was a police officer. I was raising a family at the time. I really enjoyed the experience of learning at that point in my life. I didn't enjoy the experience of never sleeping, but that was okay too. And what the couple of things that I learned from that experience, first of all, I thought the law was fascinating, and it's been very helpful for me in navigating the criminal justice system and dealing with the parts of the criminal justice system that I have to deal with. I deal with prosecutors, I deal with judges, and to have that information is helpful to me personally. I think more importantly, where I think it's been helpful is when I talk to young leaders on the police department who have very, very busy lives, and I tell them that furthering their education in any way that they want to, it doesn't have to be a law degree, but going back to school and continuing to learn even as adult can be beneficial to them in this career. And that's one of the things I try and urge my young officials to do.
What about another update question, the dirt bike situation where the young man lost his life? That specific issue is obviously problematic, but even the broader issues, and I'd like for you to address both, the broader issues of dirt bikes is troubling. What's the plan to deal with that? And also, is there any resolution as it relates to the loss of life of this man?
Oh, it's incredibly tragic. You have a young person who's lost their life in the District of Columbia in a traffic accident. It's very sad. In that particular circumstance, what we know so far is the young man was traveling northbound in the southbound lane on Division Avenue. A police officer was responding for a call for service, and the motorcycle put down a significant distance of skid marks and crashed into the car, and unfortunately he lost his life. The impact from the vehicle crash actually caused the airbag to deploy in the police SUV. So it was a significant crash.
So the officer was he trying to block? Was he trying to cut off the
that remains to be seen. It doesn't appear that way at this point in the investigation. It appears that the officer was trying to make a right-hand turn. He was responding to a call for the sounds of gunshots in the community. And so that doesn't appear to be the case, but the investigation has not been completed at this point.
Because that's illegal. That's against your rules.
You wouldn't be able to drive out in front of anybody.
Correct.
Under any circumstances.
Correct.
But everybody knows who operates a vehicle in the District of Columbia that accidents do happen. Unfortunately, the young man who was driving the motorcycle was not wearing a helmet. That contributed to the fact that he lost his life. And, you know, touching on the other issue, and it's the dirt bikes that we're seeing on a regular basis being driven through the district on the weekends, I cannot go to a community meeting where I don't have the community that's completely in an uproar about this behavior. This behavior is extremely dangerous. As we can see, we had a young person who's lost his life, but it's also very disruptive to our communities. The men that are involved in this behavior are grown men, and the community is really urging the police department in a very vocal way to do something about it.
What do you do about something like that?
We do have a plan for this, and I don't know if you follow this or not, but whenever these ATVs come out and they start doing this kind of thing, we send out our helicopter unit, and we also send out what is called our electronic surveillance unit, and they actually take images of these young men on these vehicles. Then we give those images to the public through the media, which we have done, and then we go out and we get warrants for their arrest. And this has been going on an ongoing basis. We really urge the community, particularly the folks whose communities are being disrupted by this behavior, to look at those images and let us know if they know or somebody they know who these young men are, because they have to be held accountable. The good news is if you go back just about 2 years, the rides used to be about 70 or 80 ATVs at a time. Now the groups are much smaller. On a bad day, you'll see 20 or 30. So we are having an impact. And I think hopefully if we can continue to identify the people that are still out there doing it, we can have a bigger impact. And my biggest ask is from these riders themselves is to listen. Hey, gentlemen, you're terrorizing these communities. People don't like it. You are grown adults. Please don't do it.
And what's the the rate of prosecution for these individuals? I mean, are they being prosecuted? Are they being locked up? And if so, for how long?
The Office of the Attorney General has been very cooperative. It is an arrestable offense. So when we get the warrants, we can make the arrest. The penalties are not that severe. As with any traffic violation, it's not
it's
severe.
It's a traffic violation, basically.
But like I said, I believe that we're having an impact because you're seeing fewer and fewer people participate in this behavior.
Well, summer, it's only May, so we still have the summer to go through.
We do, but yeah. We will be out there. We take it very, very seriously. And our responsibility is to seize these bikes when we can. And to hold the people that are responsible within the confines of the law that we have.
And speaking of summer, real quick, any plans on getting out there this summer to avoid any uptake in violence?
Yeah, we have our summer crime initiative that's going on. We have it every year. We've done it for the last 10 years. We identify the areas in the city. We have 6 areas in the city which have been plagued with violent crime. We have a 2-pronged approach in those areas. We use traditional law enforcement where we focus on repeat violent offenders and illegal firearms, but we also bring in other city services into those areas to provide opportunity to folks who might otherwise be involved in crime. And if you look at, and I can share the statistics with you, if you look at the statistics of the success that we've had in those areas we've identified over the past 10 years, crime has dropped precipitously, violent crime in particular in those areas. It's very successful, very excited about it. And we're looking forward to everybody having a safe summer.
Let us certainly hope so. D.C. Police Chief Peter Newsham and Washington Post reporter Keith Alexander, thank you both for coming in. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, May 24th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.